We plan to talk through the issues faced by startup founders and the people close to them.
That overused phrase, work-life balance.
It is an amazingly focusing time.
This is what we do, you know, aside from our families, this is our whole work life.
I am also known as Dr. Walling.
You know, this is a little bit non-traditional.
A little more zen in the startup life. Zen founder.
Those days were a mental struggle.
I have been stressed in the past, and I know that I will be in the future.
A founder and his or her significant other will both get value from the episode.
So I have a confession to make. I think this is the fourth day in a row that I have worn either pajamas or yoga clothes.
Yeah, that's kind of your gig these days, huh?
I wouldn't say these days. I would say for the last 4 days.
These days. When I said these, I meant the last four. Well, you were sick. It doesn't help that you came back from a microcough. And I thought it was the Vegas bug, the Vegas virus you get because it's so dry there and the hotel air has smoke and all that stuff. But both our kids were sick as well when you got back.
Yeah, I think it was just there's a lot of sickness going around our community right now. So it was a really good reminder, though, to come back and from microconf and just relax and get serious about some self-care. So I came back from microconf, which, of course, is a much busier time for you than it is for me. But, you know, it's a lot of energy to talk to strangers and be outgoing and be extroverted since I am really an introvert in my heart. But I loved being there and I always love going and love talking to people in the community. And it feels like part of my community now, too, that I have a set of friends that I like to hang out with and drink margaritas by the pool. Dave, you know who you are. So we had a great time at microconf. But yeah, I definitely came home tired and worn down. And then both of the kids were sick and I'd been away from them for a couple of days. So they were just needing some extra maternal attention. And it forced me to get really kind of serious about taking care of myself. So all this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, we were all, our whole family was kind of in pajamas and yoga clothes and workout clothes. And we transformed the living room into an art studio and just did a lot of painting and creative activities with the kids, did some gardening, sat around, listened to Harry Potter audiobooks. And it was really restorative and just great to be creative and have fun with the kids and have a nothing on the agenda to get accomplished. And I think that the experience of being so tired in the last couple of days has kind of sparked me to return to one of the topics that I think about a lot and talk about a lot, which is self-care. And of course, self-care can look like exercising well and eating well and making time to talk to your partner, those kinds of things, which is obviously super important. Those are great activities. But I think sometimes there's sort of self-care layer too. And we had a lot of conversation about this at microconf. You and I did.
Yeah, I was just commenting, I think as I was rolling into this microconf, that I was feeling just kind of tired going into it. And we've done 9 of them. This was the 9th microconf. And I was trying to figure out how to keep it feeling like new. And I guess feeling like I was getting something out of it as well. Because it's always nice to see everybody. But like you said, it's a bit overwhelming. It's hard work and a lot of focus and energy to kind of host the conference and run stuff on the back end, even though, you know, we have help doing it and everything. And so we were just kind of talking about that, of like, how can I make sure that this is really sustainable for me and that it's worth doing from a like a personal perspective? And how do I make sure that I kind of take care of my own sanity as I host this conference for 220 people.
And I think one of the conversations that we had that maybe helped give you a little more energy was I asked you, what do you need from this time? You as a microconf participant, not just as the conference co-leader, but what do you need from this time? Who do you want to network with? Who do you want to sit down and have a conversation with? What are your particular goals for things that you want to take home from the conference? And in a sense, I microconfed the microconf and challenged you to get really clear about your agenda and goals. And in a way, it seemed like that helped you to settle in and have a good experience. Obviously, you always have a good experience at microconf, but to be strategic about some of the conversations that you had and to use your time well, even as you're hosting a conference for 220 people.
Yeah. And that was the epiphany. It was changing the question or the thought. I was kind of like, man, I'm tired. It's going to be a couple of days of getting this done. And you kind of turned it around and said, well, how can you maximize your time here? You know, from the stage on the first day, we always say, we want you to take three actions away from this conference and three relationships. And you were basically implying, like, I need to ask myself those same questions. And I always get the actions out of them. And I got probably 10 different things that I'm going to do. But, you know, I haven't been diligent about really diving into relationships and deepening them and kind of meeting new people that I really wanted to meet at the conference. And so that made me instantly very deliberate. And I set up or got myself involved in two dinners over the next two nights, specifically with people that I wanted to make sure that I was able to spend time with.
And I think that's an important self-care activity because it's honoring the fact that you have limited energy and limited time, and you have a lot of responsibilities and a lot of things going on, especially while you're at MicroConf. So how do you get strategic about what's going to be helpful for your takeaways, right? Your relationship takeaways and your agenda or your strategic takeaways. And that keeps you focused and keeps you from letting all of your energy kind of ooze out in all directions at once, but instead is more targeted and directed. I think that's one of the most important self-care strategies that people can be aware of, is really protecting time and focus. And there are lots of kind of smaller examples of how to do this, but having a sense of goals, having a sense of your personal priorities, and really cultivating the ability to say no to things that distract you and aren't going to be helpful to your particular agenda.
Yeah, I think leaving notifications on is a way to really undo this and not protect your focus, is to let everyone get in touch with you all the time. So you're getting texts and Slack notifications in your email dings every time an email comes in, and there's just stuff coming at you from everywhere at once. And in essence, you are allowing that if it's happening. The silencing these notifications is something that's so oversaid and overplayed in all of these productivity posts about how we can't multitask. But I really believe that if you're not protecting your focus, you are kind of exhausting yourself. You're not working to your full potential. And I personally become very frustrated with it because I look back at the day and think, I didn't get very much done. Why is that?
I think that's something that has been really important for me as a self-care move in my job, is that I just don't check email very much and don't respond to email hardly at all on the three longer days that I'm in the clinic. I have to take care of my patients. I have to take care of the job that's in front of me, and it requires my full focus. So if I'm getting an email about, oh, we need this bio from you for that conference you're speaking at in 2 months, like, it just is that little micro distraction that is completely unhelpful and detracts from my focus. And frankly, I don't have time to do anything about it right then anyway. So really letting myself not check my email, turn off my phone, not be available when I'm actually really not available, to kind of tell the truth about what my availability is and not try to force it when it's not there.
Yeah, something I've been doing is being very deliberate about, if I am going to check Twitter or my email, I need to have the time and the headspace to be able to deal with it if something bad happens. Because most of the time, nothing bad happens. But if I flip it open and, you know, there's someone ranting on Twitter about something involving me, or if someone sent me an email that's like, I really need some help or something, if I don't have the headspace right then I shouldn't be checking it, because all it's going to do is derail me, right? It's going to make me feel bad or negative or whatever. And if I can't deal with it, it's just going to hang around. I think some other thoughts I have on protecting, because we talked about protecting time and focus. And I think some things to think about when you're protecting your time is, like, if you are at a conference like a MicroConf and you're talking to someone and you don't have anything in common, or you don't have chemistry, or it's a conversation that's not working, it's okay to, like, say, hey, you know, it was a pleasure to meet you. I'm going to go mingle around. I mean, you know, you could just totally the truth, right? You just kind of end the conversation rather than getting stuck talking to someone for 30 or 40 minutes, because you do only have a limited amount of time at these conferences and you're trying to connect with people. So that's a way to do it at a conference. And then the way to do it day to day is, you're probably going to get a lot of emails asking for, at some point, advice or meetings or conversations or help or just something. And you kind of have to make a decision if you're going to try to help everybody, or if you perhaps put them in a label that you only check once a week and you kind of batch it all, which is the way I've moved towards. And I also unfortunately, I'm not able to respond to all help requests anymore at this point either. So I think that the default, if someone sends me an email now and asks for just some advice, I typically give it to them. If it's really involved, I often will say, look, I'm sorry, I just don't have enough time. And if someone asks for FaceTime, you know, actual like coffee time or whatever, or talking on Skype, then it really has to be, there really has to be a strong reason to do that. And that's just, that's another way that you can go about kind of protecting your time.
One of the other things that I've been thinking about lately is caring for yourself by protecting your ideas. And this might be a little bit of a weird one. And this has been an interesting adjustment for me coming into the kind of micropreneur startup space, in that ideas are pretty freely shared in the community, which I think is really lovely, but they're not always attributed correctly to the person who thought of them.
That's always bothered me.
And especially for me as an academic, like, we're really hard asses about that. Even if you're not quoting someone directly, if you're using the gist of someone's thoughts, you have to attribute it or say where you got it.
Right. People can like lose their jobs over that, right? In academics.
Oh, absolutely. If you're a student, you can fail a class or get an F on a paper.
Right. They call it plagiarism, even if you're not using what they said word for word. You're just using the concepts.
Exactly. So I think it's important to be an advocate for your own ideas. And when you are someone who's chosen to publicly put your thoughts and ideas and way of thinking about your work out there, to go ahead and say, I came up with this, or I coined that term, or to really let yourself be comfortable with having cultivated something that's unique and be comfortable owning that.
Yeah, it seems easy for you to throw an idea out there and to name it and then just have it kind of take off and for folks to forget who came up with it. And like I said, it's always kind of bothered me about this space, is I'm not sure folks get as much credit for coming up with interesting things as they do. I guess I've always been someone who does credit, like every single time I use the word fund strapping, I always say Colin from customer.io came up with that. And every time I talk about there's a broadcast email sending hack, I say, we got this from Noah Kagan at AppSumo. I mean, it's just something that I've always done because I feel like I don't want to pretend like I came up with some of these brilliant ideas that I'm really just borrowing and either using for my own use or then teaching to others because they're good. And so it bothers me when that happens. It bothers me when other people do it with my stuff or even with other people's stuff. And they don't just take the 2 seconds to say, hey, this is a concept that so-and-so came up with, and then continue to go from there. It doesn't lessen who you are. You know, it doesn't make you less of an expert because you have to credit someone with coming up with the idea. And there's been several things. I mean, there's like a concierge onboarding is an example of something that kind of I cooked up over at Drip to help people get onboarded. And these days, like people kind of use that pretty freely, and it there's no path back. And there was even a discussion on Twitter the other day as to kind of who coined the phrase. And it was nice that we had podcast transcripts, and Mike Tabor went back and just commented on the thread that had been talking about it in 2013. And I had remembered never hearing the term, coming up with the idea for that, and then naming it and being like, talking to Derek about it. And he was like, man, he was really like impressed with the concept, and we just really were very happy with it. And so it's kind of weird. I mean, it's this in between, right? I don't want to go around pounding the pavement or like tooting my own horn for coming up with concierge onboarding, or aspirational pricing is another one. Obviously, stair-stepping, podcast tour, never heard of that before. Startup masterminds. Now, there were masterminds in info products, but no one was talking about them in startups. And of course, we started talking about them on the podcast. So I don't want to go to such great lengths as to like correct everyone every time they say anything. But at the same time, I do find that when I see people using them and acting like they came up with it or like it's their own thing, it's pretty irritating. Like it's not a good feeling.
Well, it does feel a little bit like a piece of you is getting ripped off. Like it's an idea that you thought of and you put out there in the world, trusting that the community will do well with it. And then when they don't, it, you feel like, oh, my ideas aren't sort of treated properly or treated well. And I can like appreciate that this sounds like maybe a jerky conversation to some people. And the idea isn't, like you said, to be like, oh, I thought of that. That's my term. Da, 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 da. But I think it is, again, for me, it's this self-care kind of question of how do you like protect the things that you've created, and whether they're ideas or terms or insights. And I think it's important to figure out how to do that, obviously without trying to be a jerk or be braggy, but it doesn't feel good when you are kind of pouring yourself out and letting your ideas be public and they're not treated well in the community.
Right. Or they're treated well, but you're just not given credit for them in the community, right? They're just passed around. I think it's like academia has that advantage because, you know, you cite people in the papers, right? And there's always a bibliography you can refer back to and there's a link back. But for some reason, that's not common practice with startup conferences and even startup blog posts. For some reason, I think that it just hasn't been, you know, the core focus, and someone overhears an idea and then just kind of runs with it and talks about it. And I genuinely believe most of it is unintentional, right? It's not done with malice and it's not done someone trying to steal your idea outright, but maybe they don't know any better or they don't think about it and they don't think about the impact that it has on someone who came up with it.
One of the other things that like has given me pause as I've been on the periphery of the entrepreneurial community is the sort of the willingness to share a lot of personal information about income and numbers and techniques. Or I love that it's a community that shares. But I also think as the community grows, it becomes a little bit more problematic to have so much of your information out there, because I think the community is really growing and thus there's a little bit more competition within the community, and it might not always be wise to have so much of your strategies and numbers and things out there.
Yeah, it's interesting. It depends on how much you share, but if you are truly transparent with your revenue and giving all that out, it can cause problems if you try to raise funding. It can cause problems if you get an acquisition offer where the buyer finds out you've released all this information they don't want people to know. And like you said, it can also bring competition. We've seen this in a number of spaces. I interviewed Josh Pigford from Baremetrics over on Startups with the Rest of Us and talked specifically about that and asked him if he thought that the fact that he revealed his metrics and let everybody know his growth rate and all that, which was, you know, very impressive early on, if he thought that brought competition. He said it absolutely did. Now, it also did some good for him, and it was a, you know, a marketing channel and such, but it's a tough balance. I don't fall on an absolute either side of this. I feel like it's super helpful for people to be able to get context, which is why I've used that technique of just-in-time transparency, where I don't reveal all my numbers all the time, but at a certain point, like when I'm doing a MicroConf talk and I'm giving examples, I might release the revenue numbers just at that point, right, for the past, you know, year or 18 months, because they come out of date pretty quick, and I guess it reduces the risk of bringing in a lot of competition or of having this ongoing, you know, where my competitors can basically look at my churn rate and look at all the stuff that if I was releasing all that. So it's kind of just this one-time snapshot, and it reduces kind of the ongoing risk, I guess, as I see it. I'm not saying it's an absolute, but I think I've always tended to lean on the side of not sharing a ton of financial specifics. And just recently, over the past, let's say, year or two, like you said, as the community's gotten bigger, there have definitely been some things that I've shared in terms of marketing approaches and specifics of how we got where we are that I have gone on to regret when some people have taken those and essentially misused them, kind of used them against us, used them to compete with us. It's a bummer. I mean, it was a no-brainer when, you know, it was just me sitting in an office making a little full-time living off a small app. But now that we have 9 full-time employees and there's kind of people's mortgages are being paid and healthcare. And I mean, there's real stuff at risk now, that it has been this a little bit of a wake-up call. Just some thought has gone into it about how much can you share? How much are you willing to share? How much are you willing to put at risk? It's not that everything you put out there is going to be taken and used against you, but realizing that, you know, at any time, some of the stuff that you share could be.
And once it's out there, it's really beyond your control. You can't explain it, or it's just out there in the water and people can kind of use it in whatever way they will.
Right. And so, I mean, there are easy techniques around this, like the just-in-time transparency is really cool because you can kind of release numbers and then not have competition knowing about them all the time. Another way is if you do find a tactic that you want to share, which of course we all do. I mean, that's what makes the community really cool, is that we are sharing stuff that you can share it. And maybe, you know, you can leave out some of the very, very specifics that enabled it to work. and give folks the gist of how it works, but you don't have to give every nook and cranny and nut and bolt, every piece of text and content and all that stuff. And folks can still, if they really do want to go after it, I'll find that they might get in touch with you. And then if you know that they're not competing with you, you can give them all that information. Or the people who are really going to execute on it are probably going to put the pieces together anyways. Like, even if you leave out the ad copy that you use, like, they'll come up with ad copy and they'll figure it out if they really want to use it.
I think a last kind of self-care strategy that again goes beyond the basics of exercise and eating well, but is really thinking about how to use your relationship energy well. And maybe another way to say that is to protect yourself from toxic people or from people who are needing more than you can really provide for them. And I think, again, for me as a psychologist, because so much of my work is about helping to take care of people who are hurting and who are appropriately needy, right? They're coming to me because they need something. That's the gig. That's perfect. That's fine. But that uses up most of my caretaking for other grownups' energy, which means that I'm pretty careful and strategic about the people that I spend a lot of time with, the people that I go on trips with, the people that I recreate with, so to speak. Those are people that I love deeply. And I don't give a lot of time or energy to people who need more from me than I can provide.
Yeah, I think that's just something, a good rule to develop over time. I remember when I was younger, I mean, even, you know, let's say high school, college, right out of college, I just didn't quite understand all the nuances of that. But it's definitely formed as I've hung out with a lot of different people over the years. It's really noticeable how I feel after hanging out with good friends versus hanging out with someone who maybe is always kind of a bummer, you know, or always looks at the negative side of things, or always wants to rag on themselves or people around them, or whatever it is. And I mean, there's this really overused kind of generic thing in the entrepreneurship circles that you're the average of the five people that you associate with. And whether that's true or not is probably up for debate. But I do believe that the people you hang around with have a heavy, heavy influence on you. And if you're around negative people all the time, it will impact you for the worse. You know, it will make you see things as negative. It will make you think other people around you are negative. It will make you gossip about people. I mean, it's stuff you don't have time for if you want to do interesting things. You know, if you want to build interesting companies and have an interesting life and have a cool family and leave a legacy and all this stuff, like, you don't have time to sit around and be negative all the time. And so I definitely make an identification fairly early on after a few conversations and pretty calculated about who I invest in, who I invest time in, and who I spend time around.
So the whole point of this conversation is to realize that the things that you are cultivating inside of you, whether it's your ideas and your insights, the things that you're doing in your business, the successes that you're having, the way that you're spending your time and focus, that those are all parts of you that are very much worth protecting and taking good care of. So this idea of self-care is about rest. It's about sleep. It's about exercise and all of the things that you do to recharge your batteries. But I think there's almost a strategic process that goes into making sure that you're protecting yourself and advocating for who you are and who you want to be in the world. And it's not a selfish act. Like, it's not designed to be all about preserving you. It's designed to be about making sure that you are the best version of yourself that you can be, so that you can do your work well, so that you can tend to your relationships well, and so that you can be fully present in the work that you're doing without feeling exhausted or feeling like you have to look over your shoulder all the time. It's about creating a way of living your life where you're at your optimum ability to perform, rather than poured out and exhausted all the time.
And that's the key there, is there are absolutely times when you're going to have to deal with or help people who are not on this idealist, and when you're going to have to, you know, do some things that don't necessarily line up with everything we've said in this podcast. And that's okay. I mean, these are extenuating circumstances. And if someone needs help, or you have a family member, or you have a friend who does need that help from time to time, like, we're not saying don't do that. You, of all people, deal with this every day and know what that's like. And so we're not saying don't help people and only protect yourself. But it is easy to fall in the trap of not getting your bucket filled enough, or not keeping yourself healthy enough to where you can do your best work and you can actually help others to the maximum extent that you can.
You have to put on your own oxygen mask before you can secure it over someone else.
There it is.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Zen Founder. Our theme song is A New Beginning by bensound.com, used under Creative Commons.